Start spreading the news. It's time for a change. We'll make a brand new start of it. Ron Paul, Ron Paul. It's your right to choose. It's the American way. The constitutional heart of it. Ron Paul, Ron Paul. I want to wake up in a country that doesn't sleep to fight for our civil rights and liberty. These little man blues are melting away. We'll make a brand new start of it. Ron Paul, Ron Paul. If we all lend a hand and stand up with this man, it's up to us to vote Ron Paul. Ron Paul, I want to wake up in a country that's truly free to find our President Paul in the White House, Capitol Hill, President Paul. To us to vote Ron Paul.
Hi, this is Stephen Vincent, and thank you for joining me for the Freedom Message today on November 20th, 2007. And I seem to be having trouble with my camera here. Let me try it again. Anyway, we've got a great show for you today. Today I'm going to play a piece from PBS, which is almost nothing short of a infomercial for Ron Paul. The only thing it's lacking is an 877 Ron Paul number at the bottom of the screen. So let me go ahead and get that up for you and see what's going on with my camera, and we'll play that first for you.
And understand how freedom works. I'm talking to him.
Strict constitutionalist Ron Paul and his bid for the presidency.
He's a Texas congressman and a country doctor. In 1988, he was the Libertarian candidate for president. Today, Ron Paul is running for the 2008 Republican nomination. He's rising in the polls, boosted by unprecedented online fundraising. Outlook's Richard Ager continues our 2008 candidate profile series with a look at Ron Paul.
One of the first things you notice about the Ron Paul campaign is its supporters. Many wear a campaign shirt bearing the question they're just waiting to answer.
The answer is Ron Paul stands for freedom. Ron Paul represents our best chance, our last best chance, to experience freedom in our time.
Paul supporters tend to be fervent, strong in their expression of approval, as though there's nowhere else to throw their support or build their hopes.
I think he's the only hope America has to be a successful country.
Who is Ron Paul?
It's probably not easy to answer in one sentence, but I'm somebody that's very concerned about our country, and I got involved in politics many years ago. I've been in Congress for 10 terms, and now I'm running for the presidency in the Republican primary.
Hi, how you doing? Nice to meet you.
During his entire political career, Ron Paul has held to a strict reading of the Constitution.
You want to end the war on drugs. Who are you speaking to when you say those things for support? Who do you think you're addressing?
Any American who believes and understands how freedom works, I'm talking to them, and they're listening, and they're rallying. I never believed there would be so many.
I've never been to the Tonight Show, never was interested. This guy is worth it, worth standing in line. True American hero, Ron Paul. God bless him.
Thanks to his supporters, the Ron Paul channel now ranks as the 40th ever most popular viewing spot on YouTube. And they put their money where their mouths are. On November 5th, they raised more than $4 million online in a single day, a record.
I'm pretty surprised it's gone that far and that fast. And, you know, to get 20,000 new donors and supporters in one day is pretty good. I've tried this over 30 years, and nothing. I couldn't do that in a year.
So why this time? Why now? I mean, because you have been in this game for quite a while.
It must be that the American people are fed up, and what I'm saying is touching a nerve with them, and they say, you know, it makes good sense.
It's time that we think seriously about bringing our troops home.
The rawest nerve is the war in Iraq.
The American people didn't go in. A few people advising this administration, a small number of people called the neoconservatives, hijacked our foreign policy. They're responsible, not the American people. They're not responsible. We shouldn't punish them.
Congressman, we are one nation. We can't be divided. We have to be one nation under God. That means if we make a mistake, we make it as a single country, the United States of America, not the divided states of America.
When we make a mistake, it is the obligation of the people through their representatives to correct the mistake, not to continue the mistake.
And that's what we do on the floor of the Senate?
No, we've dug a hole for ourselves and we've dug a hole for our party. We're losing elections, and we're going down next year if we don't change it. And it has all to do with foreign policy, and we have to wake up to this fact.
Even if we lose elections, we should not lose our honor, and that is more important
than
the Republican Party.
We've lost over 5,000 Americans over there in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and plus the civilians killed. How many more do you want to lose? How long are you going to be there? What do we have to pay to save face? That's all we're doing is saving face. It's time we came home.
Gentlemen, thank you. Wendell.
How do you feel, you know, standing up on the stage, taking this really singular position that is not shared by any of the other candidates?
Well, it doesn't bother me that much. It bothers me that the Republican Party has drifted so far from their basic beliefs. And I'm very confident that I'm talking Republican talk, that this is what Republicans talk about, limited government, balanced budgets. And we always took this position on foreign policy in the past, not always, but basically. And we benefited tremendously by being a non-interventionist foreign policy. George Bush won his election on arguing, in my case, for foreign policy, a humble foreign policy, no nation building.
Paul says by ignoring the Constitution and its limits on big government, Republicans as well as Democrats have subverted the public good, and the public is starting to realize it.
And all of a sudden they see that you can come up with sensible answers, and they can all be found under the rule of law and under the Constitution, which saves a lot of money and restores a little bit of sanity to our budget. And I think people are just ready for a different answer.
For Ron Paul, that different answer lies in reducing the size of the federal government.
I personally would do it by cutting almost everything, but that's not going to be politically feasible. So in the practical world, you have to find an area that there could be a consensus, and that's in foreign affairs. We're spending almost $1 trillion a year maintaining our empire. We have to give up on our empire because it's going to go away anyway, because when currencies are destroyed, they end. Just as the Soviet system ended because their financial system, their economic system couldn't maintain it. So it's a choice of waiting for it to self-destruct or wising up and saying, we were never meant to be an empire. It's not in the Constitution. It's not our purpose. We aren't the policemen. Bring our troops home and save $300 or $400 or $500 billion a year. This would restore confidence into the dollar, balance the budget, and then you can deal with the Federal Reserve as time goes on.
I was wondering if you could tell me how you are a better candidate for the medical marijuana patients like myself.
I would absolutely never use the federal government to enforce a law against anybody using marijuana.
Ron Paul has a libertarian view on personal freedom. He believes most matters should be decided by individuals or at the state level, including abortion.
Now, you, of course, have delivered many babies in
4,000.
How has that shaped your stand on this?
Well, I think about abortion in terms of the political situation as well as the legal situation. As a physician, I know I have a legal responsibility, and I can be sued if I mishandle the unborn, you know, if I give the wrong medication. So it's a very legal entity, and those legal rights are gained at conception. And we've had a national law passed through Roe versus Wade, which has literally legalized abortion in any trimester. And I see this as rather abhorrent. First, I don't think the federal government should have been involved. The states should be able to do this. So I want to repeal that and allow the states to deal with it.
Ron Paul wants to reduce the role of government, so he is reluctant to add greater responsibilities in areas such as fighting global warming.
I don't buy into the end of the world is coming because it's going to be warm and it was all our fault. But I think we contribute to it, and I think we should study it.
Ron Paul's supporters have surprised many by boosting his campaign this far on their energy and attention to the issues.
Foreign policy, freedom, Patriot Act, the way the government is stamping down the Constitution and basically shredding it. And he wants to restore our freedom.
But this means the people of this country have to accept the idea of responsibility for themselves.
By pointing to government as the problem, not the solution, Ron Paul has brought his view of the Constitution into a presidential race. At the very least, his ideas present Republican voters with a clear and very different choice. For New Hampshire Outlook, I'm Richard Ager.
I think people are very unhappy, and they've been listening to all the other candidates, but I think they're hearing the same old stuff, and they hear something different from me.
Ron Paul would also like to eliminate the IRS and the income tax, though he acknowledges...
Okay, so there we had a nice report on Ron Paul from PBS. So for some reason you cannot see me today. You're getting a blank screen, and I have no idea why that is. What we're going to do now is play something of Ron Paul on the Karelin Report today, in which he spoke about the economy. Now, the dollar today took another plunge. You know, I talk about this frequently. Took another plunge to another all-time low. It ended down 0.666. And that was, I believe, 0.2%, which is a large move. And ending a bounce that it took for about 4 days. And what we call a dead cat bounce, and plunged to all new lows. Gold, of course, surged on that. They're expecting the Federal Reserve Bank to cut interest rates and make an emergency cut. In other words, a cut not at a time when it's planned to meet and discuss whether to raise or lower interest rates, but an intermeeting cut is expected sometime soon due to the deteriorating economic situation to stimulate the economy. They're going to loosen money. Loosening money, of course, increases the supply of dollars, which, of course, in a supply-demand equation causes the dollar to go down. Demand decreasing as well as supply increasing for the dollar. So let's go ahead and listen to what Ron Paul had to say about the dollar on the Karelin Report today.
You are listening to the daily version of the Karelin Economics Report. I am Al Karelin. It is Monday, the 19th of November. I'm chatting today with my good friend and probably someone who I hold in more esteem than almost anyone else in the world, Congressman Ron Paul. Ron Paul has been a regular guest on our show until he got so darn busy because he got so famous. But just to give you folks a little background, Jay Taylor, my buddy who was here with me, introduced me to the congressman about 3 years ago. At that point, I met Jeff Deist, who is also with us. Jeff was in the congressman's office. Jeff and I and our wives have become good friends. Jay Taylor and I have always been good friends. And Congressman, I've got to tell you, I can't think of a better endeavor for this guy to do and for these other two gentlemen than to do everything we can to support your campaign. Thank you so much for taking some time today. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you again.
Jay is chomping at the bit. He's got a number of questions he wants to ask you, economic policies, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to sign off, but I'll be doing a lot of listening. I want to say it is very gratifying to me, sir, that you are doing so remarkably well. Mr. Taylor, where do you want to start, sir?
Well, I would just like to say we're pleased that you don't have time to come on our show every week or so, Ron. I think that's really the best news we've had. Because what's really, really encouraging to me is the grassroots support. I can't believe how energetic the people are in Queens, New York, where I am. These are people that will spend lots and lots of time doing whatever they feel is necessary to get behind your campaign. And that's the most encouraging thing to me. But, you know, we're here at this conference, hard asset conference, and most of us are here because we believe that the monetary system is in big trouble, and I know you think so as well. I was reading about one Austrian economist that was at least was a friend of John Law, the great inflationist that caused the South Sea bubble, and, you know, the tragedy that occurred as a result of that. And this particular Austrian economist made a fortune understanding the problems that Mr. Law's inflationary policy was going to create. Those of us that are here at this conference are, you know, we're also trying to profit from this abnormalities or these problems in the market that are caused by fiat money. You, on the other hand, are using your efforts to try to change the system. I guess what I'd like to ask you is, what do you see coming? What do you see really difficult times catastrophic times, and do you see a hyperinflationary event, or do you see the possibility of a deflationary depression? What's your read on the future if we don't change our policies?
Well, my biggest concern is the value of the dollar, because I believe we live in uncharted waters when it comes to monetary policy, and that we have internationalized inflation like we never have before through the fact that the dollar maintained its integrity in the marketplace, though it wasn't deserved, even after Bretton Woods broke down. So we literally became a nation that was able to print the reserve the reserve currency, and otherwise print gold, which taught us not to work very hard and then to export our paper money, and the world was taking it. Now the world is starting to reject it, and they think they're going to reject it slowly and steadily. Most of the money managers that I know say, well, you know, decline in the dollar is no big deal as long as it's steady and slow. But if you look at monetary history, it doesn't happen that way when people finally panic and get out of the currency. So that is what I fear. And right now, of course, in campaigning, I talk about the excessive spending overseas as well as the runaway spending here and the problems we face. But I tell them the most important economic statistic is not the CPI or even M3 or any of these things. It is the value of the currency on the international exchange market, which now is changing rather significantly. And although the dollar held its value on the international exchange markets longer than it maybe we thought it should have, now something's going on. I anticipate the events that will transpire here in the next couple of years will be much worse than that was what happened in 79, 1980.
You know, we had an interesting conversation yesterday, Jeff, when Kathy and I were having lunch with Jeff, Congressman Paul, and you know, we talked about the concept of freedom. We talked about the concept of the erosion of freedom in the United States right now. That's something that I find to be absolutely terrifying. Jeff, why don't you kind of tell Ron what we discussed, and let's get his opinion on this.
Well, it is terrifying, Al. I think that an economic collapse in this country based on the devaluation of the dollar could unfortunately bring about a period where we have tyranny in the United States, and that's why I think it's so important that everybody listening support Ron Paul in any way they can, find out more about him, and just understand the heroic nature of his campaign. I mean, for the first time in modern history, someone is talking about monetary policy in a presidential campaign and tying that to the daily well-being of American citizens. And I think that's historic, and I think it's heroic.
Congressman, you introduced Kathy and I and Sarah and Stephanie to Judge Andrew Napolitano when we first met about 2.5 years ago in Washington, D.C. Got a copy of his book, Constitutional Crisis. It is really terrifying to me what's going on in our country in the sense that we have totally deviated from the Constitution. Why don't you tell our listeners how you feel about that?
Well, I have a lot of respect for Andrew Napolitano. Matter of fact, his new book, Nation of Sheep, is his book that I'm reading right now. But, yeah, his concerns are very real, and Jeff expressed them very clearly. Economic collapse is going to further threaten the undermining of our liberties because people will once again panic. But we're already in the midst of the loss of those liberties because certain individuals who are really controlling our government behind the scenes, that I refer to as the neoconservatives, have taken advantage of the panic that occurred after 9/11. And now the plan to have a perpetual war against terrorism and Islamic fundamentalism, you know, is just goes on and on. And people have been too willing to give up their liberties. But what I'm seeing on the campaign trail is that there's a lot of people who are not going to accept it quietly. And if we can prepare them well enough, and both in the sense of a political preparation as well as financial preparation, the more the merrier. The more people who are hurting, the more they'll cry out for more government. The more people who understand liberty and also understand how to protect themselves financially, the better chance we will have to combat what I expect will be some very bad times.
Well, I will say this, Congressman. The dollar is going to continue to get worse between now and the primaries in the coming year. And the Federal Reserve has two choices, both unpleasant, one of which it can raise interest rates to try to keep our international friends interested in dollar. But that will hurt the economy, further slow the economy of your home. The other thing they can do is to keep feeding the junkie, so to speak, by lowering interest rates and trying to prop up the economy, but devalue the dollar even more rapidly. And I think neither one of those choices, are good. And I think it's so important that Congressman Paul's campaign have some momentum going into the early primaries next year so that this issue of monetary policy and the dollar can stay in front of the public. And what that takes, as you know, is more of those devaluing greenbacks to keep this campaign in the forefront and hopefully have some success in those early primaries.
You know, Jeff, I think what's happening is that it's coming in our direction as far as getting the attention on this, and I'm delighted for this. Although we talk a lot about foreign policy and just spending, it was the monetary policy that first motivated me to run for Congress, but just the other day, you know, when Bernanke was before the committee, I essentially relayed to him what you said. You know, they're sort of trapped, and I said that to Bernanke that he was sort of between a rock and a hard place. You know, is he going to save the dollar, or is he going to try to prop it up with more inflation? And they really don't have an answer for that. And this is the reason that I'm really delighted that we're going to have a chance to keep talking about this. After that last session with Bernanke, it was the first time probably in the 15, 20, or 30 years that I've been doing this off and on with the Federal Reserve Chairman, all the way back to Miller and even Volcker, nobody ever called, you know. But this time they said, oh, you really took this guy on, you know. But before this, nobody was paying attention. So what seems to be happening is it took an incident which I don't think should have been the most important one, and that was the ability to raise money. Now we have credibility. The ideas didn't count, but now we have credibility because we have a lot of supporters and we're raising money. But we'll accept the credibility no matter how we get it. But this is good for this discussion because now I have a lot more calls from the financial news stations to talk about monetary policy.
Ron, I would like to mention the other day Bernanke tried to tell you that there wasn't any connection for Americans, that a declining dollar wasn't going to hurt Americans. Could you perhaps explain to our listeners why that's not true?
Yeah, he was saying this was an international event and this wouldn't affect you on a daily basis, but it does because everything is it depends on the value of the dollar. And all our import prices are going to go up, and if the dollar goes down on exchange markets, somebody, and I pointed out to them that, you know, anybody who has savings, people who try to make it on their own, and the elderly, I mean, they just lose money. So although it might not happen in a day or a week, if the market says the dollar on the international exchange markets went down 10%, and they said, well, there's no CPI movement, believe me, the real cost of living in time, whether it's 2 months or 3 months or 4 months, will do the catching up for the dollar going down on an international exchange market. To pretend that doesn't have a significance here at home is just daydreaming, and he knows better, but he had to, you know, take the usual approach to reassure everybody, don't sweat it, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. That's more or less what he was saying.
You know, Congressman, the interesting question that I have is that the true situation was so obvious to me, I don't know how long ago, 5, 10, 15 years ago, whatever, but it really came to the forefront in my mind about 6 years ago when Jay and I were just having an informal conversation and he brought up the issue of personal debt in the United States, and then the conversation escalated from there into other areas. What I don't understand, sir, is why are the government leaders, for lack of better terms, not at all focused on this? How come you're the only guy? I don't get it.
You know, most of that is not malicious. The members of Congress that I know don't care a lot, and they don't understand it, and they don't think it's very important, and that's part of it. And I think the individuals in Washington who, you know, may be running Treasury and the Federal Reserve and the advisors to the president, you know, they know exactly what it is, and they have to keep it under wraps. And that's why they'll participate in the pretense of CPIs not going up and the money supplies not going up and the gold price. I'm sure they manipulate when they're able to keep it lower than it should be, to try to reassure everybody. But I just think there's a few of them. But there's just so few in the Congress that care. And those individuals that do and are critical of the Fed are usually the ones that want lower interest rates. And they never really ask the question, how do you lower interest rates? Yeah, you do it by deflating, devaluing the currency, but they never get to that next step. They just want to use the Fed to prop up this welfare, warfare machine going, and conservatives, I guess, can close their eyes because they want the deficit financing for the war and foreign policy, and liberals for domestic spending. So I think it's very convenient to not rock the boat when it comes to the Federal Reserve.
Well, the other thing, Congressman, is that the loose credit and easy money policies of the Federal Reserve over, let's say, the last 15 to 20 years have benefited Wall Street, especially the folks at the top of Wall Street, tremendously. And these folks are diversified internationally. They have money around the world. They have perhaps even homes around the world. So some of these people, and I'm not speaking of any sort of conspiracy, but a lot of these people at the very top, of course, are going to be A-OK no matter what happens to the U.S. dollar. And I think we have to be honest enough sometimes to say, you know, sometimes the people making decisions are not concerned with that about average Americans.
Well, you know, and I think this makes the point of Austrian economics, especially Mises, who talks about, you know, when you destroy a currency, there is, even in the early stages, there's a transfer of wealth from the middle class and the poor to the wealthy. And, you know, if you're a true capitalist, you don't resent Bill Gates making a lot of money if he provides a good service and he doesn't get subsidies or privilege from the government. But all of a sudden, I'm running into it in the campaign. People are hurting, and they're upset about economics and their standard of living and paying their bills, whether it's medical or educational benefits and buying food and gasoline. At the same time, we have more billionaires than ever before on Wall Street. So I do think very definitely there's been this transfer of wealth, and it's not easy to explain that to the average voter, but it's something that I attempt to do all the time, because that to me is so important that they understand exactly why people on Wall Street are doing so much better.
We are going to be back again tomorrow with Congressman Ron Paul in part two of this discussion. Very, very interesting man. I want to say that we are originating our show this week, most of this week anyway, from San Francisco, California, Hard Asset Investment Conference, which is put on by International Investment Conferences. If you didn't attend this year, you really need to be here next year. See you tomorrow again with Congressman Ron Paul.
Okay, so a very nice interview with Congressman Paul on economic matters. He does certainly seem to be somewhat alarmed by the current situation that we find ourselves in. And there does seem to be an increasing consensus among pundits who tend to the hard money side of analysis that this is the big it, that many of these Austrian economists and hard money analysts have been predicting for quite a while the great unwinding of the U.S. dollar and the debt bubble that accompanies it is in fact in progress right now. The dollar again plunging today to an all-time new low. Speaking of dollars, we received an email from the Ron Paul campaign urging people to step up their contributions to the campaign. Even though we're well on track to the goal of $12 million by the end of the year, the campaign indicates that they need the money sooner rather than later, since many of the media buys that need to be taken need to happen now in order to actually have the media buys in place for the end of the year and the beginning of January when they need to actually go out. So they're asking for people to step it up and get money into the campaign sooner rather than later. Of course, we all know that on December 16th, which is now about 3 weeks away, almost 4 weeks away, there will be another mass fundraising effort on the anniversary of the Boston Tea Party. Mike Huckabee is apparently trying to tear a page out of the Ron Paul book, and he is attempting his own money bomb, and it appears to have been rather of a money dud, with only approximately $95,000 being raised today in his money bomb. I'm not sure if that's how they're billing it, but I've actually looked at the website, and their little interactive timeline has not moved in the hour that I have been checking in on it. And their goal for the month of November is $2 million. They're now at $971,000. Interesting to look at the Mike Huckabee forum. It's almost comical. Let's see. According to here's, I'll read some posts here. Okay, this is funny. There are apparently Ron Paulers in the Mike Huckabee forum, and unfortunately, they're really upsetting the Huckabees. Well, let's start with this one. According to Mike Huckabee's website graph, we started at $815,000, and we are now at 2:30 p.m. We are at $910,000, raised $95,000, 9.5 hours to go. I think the millions will start rolling in after people get out of work. The next post, are we there yet? The next post, I hope my U.S. Post Office money order arrives in Mike Huckabee's hands today and it counts towards the $20 million goal. I guess apparently they've set a goal of $20 million. I do think Huckabee should promise to lower the price of stamps. 41 cents is not cheap. We are kicking ass and taking names. We will raise $20 million today. That has to be someone posting as a joke. I can't believe that someone would actually believe that Mike Huckabee is going to raise $20 million on the internet today. Next post. Whoop, whoop. Someone donated $10. Next post. Well, the meter hasn't moved. Maybe everyone is sleeping. I'm sure when the sun comes up, we will quickly raise $20 million. Come on, Christian soldiers. These have to be posts from spoofers. They can't be serious posts. They can't be. Here it is, folks. Next post. Here it is, folks. Monday, 11:55. The official money bomb starts in 5 minutes. I think I was going in the wrong direction. $20 million in one day. Let's show the world what we can do. We are starting with the already raised amount of $850,000. Let's go and let God guide us. Start donating. And let's roll down to the very end. Now, Chuck Norris is apparently their big hook here. He has a little piece of video at the top of the Mike Huckabee website. And the rest of this is pretty much a back and forth between a smattering of maybe only one Mike Huckabee supporter and some Ron Paul supporters just shooting barbs back and forth. It's really kind of sad, actually. And then if you go to MikeHuckabee.com, there's a little piece of Chuck Norris there, apparently. That's their hook for this. There's a little piece on Fox News. Huckabee aims to drum up online donations, uses Chuck Norris, Ric Flair as bait, perhaps trying to pull a Ron Paul. GOP dark horse turned contender Mike Huckabee is aiming to haul in gobs of online donations by Tuesday at midnight as he rides a wave of strong polling and buzz in Iowa. Well, it isn't really happening, apparently. The Mike Huckabee bomb is a dud. Let's go ahead to talk to you now about the next piece I have for you. Well, it seems as though Mr. Bill O'Reilly really has kind of gone over the deep end. The next piece I'm going to play for you is rather disturbing. It's almost fascistic in its tone and content. It's really, really rather disturbing. Let's go ahead and play this for you, and I'll talk about it. But in this, Bill O'Reilly basically threatens dissenters with all kinds of dire consequences should they fail to stop from dissenting.
Now for the top story tonight, freedom of speech versus dangerous conduct. In addition to the O'Donnell rhetoric, we now have public servants like Secretary of State Rice being accosted by loons. As stated, this kind of behavior is flat out dangerous and will lead to violence if not checked. Joining us now from San Francisco, Margaret Hoover, a Republican strategist, and here in the studio, Kirsten Powers, Democratic strategist and Fox News analyst. All right, Powers, now, we've had this discussion with you before. You tend to play down any kind of celebrity craziness. I contend, because of people like O'Donnell and the loony websites. What say you?
I say that the loony websites are loony, and they're a fringe movement. You saw Bill Clinton shouting them down. You see Bill Maher shouting them down. Bill Maher, who is very, very liberal, I'm sure you consider being part of the far left. And I think they're just a fringe movement. And they have people, you know, they go around, they follow Ron Paul. It's just, they're everywhere.
Do you see my point that it's getting dangerous when a person gets that close to Secretary Rice with mock blood on her, walks up to her in her face? This is dangerous, all right? It didn't happen 6 months ago or a year ago. It is happening now because of O'Donnell and her ilk. The media doesn't say a word about it. Only me. Don't you see my point here?
I don't.
You don't.
I do not see
you
how
think
Rosie
this is
O'Donnell,
done in a vacuum.
I don't see how Rosie O'Donnell is responsible for what that person did.
You don't think
Secretary
she
Rice,
encourages
think,
this kind of behavior?
No, I don't. I just don't believe that there's any connection between those two things.
I can't force you to be reasonable, Powers.
I can't force you to see. You're drawing a connection where none exists, Bill.
All right, let's see what Hoover thinks. Does a connection exist, Ms. Hoover?
Well, what happens is there seems to be, as you point out, Bill, an increasing prevalence of supposed fringe groups. And it may happen that they're fringe, but it sure would be helpful to get some clarification that they're fringe from the Democratic leaders. Not Bill Clinton, because he's not running for president, but from every presidential contender on the Democratic side. Wouldn't it be helpful to hear them distance themselves from this?
Well, they're not. They went to the Coase Convention. You don't get more hateful than those people. They're Nazis on the left. And they all went in and paid due diligence to the website. So we're not expecting that. And I thought Clinton did a very good job. I thought he did an excellent job in putting those people in their place. Go ahead.
But he's not, I'm sorry, Bill, but he's not running for president. Hillary Clinton's running for president, not Bill Clinton. John Edwards, Barack Obama. It would be helpful if they would distinguish themselves from these leftist fringe groups. And by the way, where do you distinguish fringe versus mainstream? Because I've heard MoveOn.org called fringe, but MoveOn.org also happens to be the one organization that, whether it's fringe or not, no Democratic candidate in the leading
tier
would
make
distinguish
me defend,
themselves.
Don't make me defend those defamers. But they're not pushing a 9/11 is a conspiracy agenda there. They're vicious in what they do, but there's a difference. Look, John Lennon is in the ground, okay? He's dead. All right? This is no joke here. This isn't a joke. I know you smiled, but you didn't mean to smile at Lennon. But this isn't a joke. People like Rosie O'Donnell get up there. They're seen worldwide. They say the most irresponsible stuff you can imagine. They hurt people who lost loved ones on 9/11 and then are not held accountable by anybody but me. This is going to stop, Powers. It's going to stop here.
Look,
anybody doing this, and this is a warning to Mark Cuban, who's distributing that film mm-hmm. in a few weeks that have U.S. soldiers murdering and raping. This is a warning to you, bud, okay? You pull that movie or I'm going to be your worst nightmare, because this is going to lead to death. And you've got to see that. You have to see that just based on a Rice confrontation.
No, I don't see it. I don't see it. And
you don't want to see it.
And I think what Margaret just said was also very irresponsible, drawing some connection between Hillary Clinton and John Edwards and Barack Obama and 9/11 truthers. There's no connection between those things.
Look,
any more than do I see
she's saying, and she has a legitimate point, those people wouldn't, they embrace the far left by going to that coast.
They do not embrace these people. These people have nothing to do with the far left.
They embrace the far left.
Cynthia McKinney is one of these people, and she wants to run as the Green Party candidate. They're nothing to do with the Democratic Party.
All right. Go ahead, Hoover.
I was just going to say, you know, I didn't tie the connection. I was just asking for clarification from them. Let's see leadership from the Democrats that suggests
with a group that they have nothing to do with? I mean, that's what you're asking for clarification for. How about the Republicans
come out and talk about
the Westboro Baptist Church that's going around protesting
Why don't we have
people?
Democratic leadership call the fringe that you're calling the fringe? Let's call it the fringe.
It has nothing to do with
everybody should condemn these people
fringe.
Across. Let's make this easy.
Yeah.
Everybody should condemn these people across
Absolutely.
The board. By the way, this
that's
Westboro Baptist Church that you referenced, the guy's a registered Democrat.
Okay, but then where are the evangelical leaders coming out?
I don't know. They're all nuts. But nobody on the GOP curries favor with these clowns.
And nobody
and these are the people,
Democratic
ladies
Party
and gentlemen.
Favors with the truthers.
They went to the Coast Convention.
They're not truthers.
No, but they're people who say we're glad Tony Snow is cancer. And you know it.
Okay.
You're splitting the hair.
No, it's not.
You're splitting the hair.
What a commenter says versus what somebody who's actually. Marcos Melitis didn't say that.
Every American should condemn these people. And I will tell you, I'm going to make this prediction, if they're not reined in by the authorities, and they should be, that terrible intrusion in San Francisco should have been a criminal activity there. Somebody's going to get hurt. All right, ladies, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. Okay, so there we have Bill O'Reilly essentially threatening dissenters. I find his statements nearly fascistic. And very much indicative of the climate that is being whipped up right now and is symbolized by the homegrown terrorism and violent radicalization prevention act, which I've spoken of here on this show, that is making its way through Congress. There seems to be a growing trend, which Mr. O'Reilly's comments certainly reflect, a trend towards establishing certain points of view as being outside of the bounds of acceptability and as being within the bounds of being punished by law and legislated out of existence and enforced out of existence. So he starts the report saying, freedom of speech versus dangerous conduct. And that's his paradigm here. That's his duality, freedom of speech versus dangerous conduct. You know, which side are you on? Okay, are you going to be an advocate of freedom of speech, or are you going to be an advocate of restricting dangerous conduct? He makes it quite clear at the end that these types of activities need to be reined in, and authorities should rein these people in. Apparently, he has no regard for freedom of speech, no regard for the constitutional right to redress grievances. Now, I'm sorry that Condoleezza Rice was accosted by a woman with blood on her hands. She wasn't touched. She wasn't in any danger at all. Although certainly Mr. O'Reilly indicates that it's so dangerous to be confronted. Well, yes, I'd have to say that these people who protest, who speak up in public, who confront public officials with their crimes, are dangerous, in fact. They're dangerous to the status quo. They're dangerous to the sleeping population, which slumbers in oblivious to what's going on. They're dangerous to that. Yes, they are dangerous. They are dangerous to you, Bill O'Reilly. They are dangerous to you because you rely on a nation of sheep as your audience. So you're right. They are dangerous. And thank God for that, because this system and the people that run it need to be put in danger of losing their position. And that is exactly what's happening right now. There is a revolution afoot in this land. There is a peaceful, democratic revolution taking place among people, taking all different kinds of action on many different levels, most significantly, I believe, in the Ron Paul revolution and the effort to elect Ron Paul president. But it reflects itself in many different ways, shapes, and forms. Thank God for it. If not, we would probably already be under a complete dictatorship. So there's all this talk about fringe groups and how fringy they are and how many of them are. There's quote-unquote a prevalence of fringe groups. Well, if there's a prevalence of them, then how can they be fringe? If there's so darn many fringies out there, how are they fringe? Aren't they then the mainstream? Aren't you then on the fringe? If the fringies are prevalent and your point of view is in danger, which is what you're indicating here, Mr. O'Reilly, aren't you the one who's on the fringe? It's going to stop. This is a warning. This is going to lead to death. Okay, so these are threats. These are threats. And I think that, you know, this kind of hate speech from Bill O'Reilly, you know, is indicative, is in lockstep, is in goose step with the Homegrown Terrorism and Violent Radicalization Prevention Act and with all the other noise that we're hearing from the establishment about being afraid of the population and the trend towards creating and manufacturing an internal threat. So that's what's going on with Bill O'Reilly. Ron Paul is so GQ. Yes, Ron Paul is GQ. He has been named as one of GQ's Men of the Year. Yes, you heard it right. Ron Paul has been named as one of GQ's Men of the Year. This just in. GQ announced today the honorees for the magazine's 12th annual Men of the Year issue, featuring three separate covers and hitting newsstands nationwide November 27th, 2007. Ron Paul has been named as Dark Horse of the Year. So, who knows? Maybe there will be a Ron Paul GQ cover. Very interesting. So, Ron Paul is Man of the Year. Run down. There's a whole bunch of new print media. There's two pieces in the Los Angeles Times. There's something in the New York Times. Ron Paul's tight-fisted campaign. There is something in The Nation. Ron Paul rising. The new CNN WMUR-TV poll of likely GOP presidential primary voters in New Hampshire has former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney retaining his from-the-neighborhood lead. Arizona Senator John McCain continues to run second in the primary state with his numbers unchanged since the last CNN-MUR survey was completed in September. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani is in third place and slipping fast, down 8 points since September. So who is in fourth place and rising? Who is displaying the most momentum? It's not media darling Fred Thompson, nor the more genuinely interesting Mike Huckabee. Texas Congressman Ron Paul, the anti-war renegade, has displaced the two more mainstream contenders to take the number four position. Let me just stop there. I mean, doesn't this make Ron Paul mainstream? Don't you at least get to be mainstream when you're number four in a 10-man race? Okay. Paul doubled his support from September to November. During the same period, Paul's sparring partner on foreign affairs issue, Giuliani, lost fully one-third of his support, and Thompson lost a remarkable two-thirds of his support. So here's a question. When is Washington Press Corps going to start treating Ron Paul as seriously as it does Fred Thompson? The answer, the likely answer is not soon. And that's the most frustrating thing about the way in which the GOP race is being covered by the major media. After all, Ron Paul has more to say and says it better than any of the other Republicans. With a fair shake from the media, he'd be rising even faster in New Hampshire and elsewhere. Of course, one of the reasons Paul's on the rise now is the fact that he's not the kind of contender who tailors his message or his campaign to meet media expectations. And in this volatile year, that may prove to be a smart strategy. At the very least, it's starting to pay off in the live-free-or-die state of New Hampshire. In the Washington Times, there's an article called Unlikely Allies Unite for Paul's Quixotic Bid. I don't have time to read it for you, but something to look into. So quite a bit of Ron Paul media, print media. And again, Ron Paul is so GQ. Great news. So I'm going to wrap it up here for you now and leave you with a tune. And I will speak to you again tomorrow. Remember, the showtime has changed. We're starting around 5 minutes before the hour and then ending at about 10 minutes before the hour. So I'm going to go ahead and roll a little Ron Paul song for you. Here's something I haven't played in quite a while. Three Shoes Posse doing their Ron Paul Is Here.
I am known for sticking to principle and not flip-flopping. Guarantee that I would never abuse habeas corpus.
We want him to get the America way from my help.
The freedom message brings us together. It doesn't divide us.
I'll say, Ron Paul is here, waking up people everywhere. Ron Paul is here, making people be aware. Ron Paul is here.
The freedom message,
waking up people everywhere. Ron Paul is here,
defending liberty.
Vote for the man, Lord, next year. There's a doctor in the house. Is there a doctor in the house? Is there a doctor in the house? Is there a doctor in the house? Well, Houston, we have a problem. We need Ron Paul to solve them. Houston, we have a problem. We need Ron Paul to solve them.
Principle, the moral principle is that of defending liberty and minimizing the scope of government. If you think the government has to take care of us from cradle to grave, and if you think our government should police the world and spend hundreds of billions of dollars on a foreign policy that we cannot manage, you can't get rid of the IRS. But if you want to lower taxes...
Okay. Sounds like we've got a caller on the line. Is there somebody that wanted to ask a question or offer something for the show? You have a caller on the line?
Hello?
Yes.
This is Doug James from New Hampshire.
Yes, sir. How can
I'm
I help
you? I'm a long-time
you?
Ron Paul supporter, and I got your name and number here from an email I received. I figured I'd just give you a call. The reason I wanted to call is that Ron Paul's doing pretty good, and he's doing pretty good money-wise. But I just thought I'd let people know that I'm in a prosperity program. There's like 100 different prosperity programs in the world, which are supposedly going to pay out soon. Generally speaking, the majority of the people in these programs want to see a change in government, and I would say they would be Ron Paul supporters. So when these prosperity programs pay out, you're going to see a real increase in support for Ron Paul. The unfortunate part is that we can only contribute $2,300. However, the way around that is to do private advertising, kind of like this guy in Massachusetts did on this USA Today.
Mm-hmm.
Ad that's coming out.
Well, there are certainly a large number of private efforts and people forming political action committees to raise funds for different projects. In fact, what we're doing right now, this is something that as soon as I get off the show here, I'm going to be working on this Call America project. We're going to be calling the entire country using a automated dialing system. It's called voice broadcasting. You can call hundreds of thousands of numbers at a single time and broadcast a message to all these people. And we're raising funds privately to do that through a political action committee. So there are places to put your money and ways to put your money to work that will have a direct impact on the campaign. And certainly one of the places we're going to be targeting with the Call America program is going to be New Hampshire, of course.
Well, like I said, I'm in this program. I'm one of the younger people. I'm 56 years young. Most of the people are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, or 90s are dying out. And I'm not quite certain how many are in the program. I hear anywhere from 300,000 to 300 million, I mean 3 million, excuse me, worldwide. And we're expecting to come in, the least is in the millions, but we're hearing the word billions. Mm. And I know if I have 9 family members in this program, if I come into the money that I'm expecting, I would personally spend $1 billion on Ron Paul. You know, now, like you say, officially you can only spend $2,300, but I'll, you know, run private advertising. I'd probably go contact the meetup groups and give them money so they could have signs and posters and bumper stickers or whatever.
Well, great. Well, time is definitely short. It's not, time is not a luxury that we have, unfortunately, so let's hope it all happens very soon.
I know that's the problem.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for your call, and call in again some other time. We do need to wrap up the show because we got another show coming up again sometime.
Sorry, I just thought I'd let you know that there, you know, these prosperity programs are out there. When this pays out, I'm not the only one in the program who will be a Ron Paul supporter. So money should not be an issue.
Good. Well, I hope it all happens soon. We got to wrap because we've got another show coming up.
Okay.
Thanks so much. All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.